This is the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
All right, I'm going to zap her again. Charge up the paddles. Come on, let's go.
Sorry, Doctor.
Hold the compressions.
Clear.
Straight line.
Good evening and welcome to Rock and Roll Autopsy. We are the Forensic Files on your radio dial. My name is Scott, and have we got a great show for you tonight? No, we don't. Damn it, the phone is ringing again. It's the request line. All right, let's pick it up. WRNRA, East of the Rockies. Hey, breather, what's going on, man? You've got razor burn from overzealous manscaping? Ouch! I'm sorry, that must hurt. Go easy next time. What do you mean it's not nearly as painful as listening to our shitty podcast? Listen, you called the request line. Is there a song you'd like us to perform an autopsy on? Alive by Pearl Jam? You got it. All right, buckle up, gang. The subject of our rock and roll autopsy tonight will be Alive by grunge icons Pearl Jam. We'll get the show started after these very important messages from our sponsors.
Get a jump on summer with music, movies, and more at Camelot Music, like the new release from Pearl Jam. From Pearl Jam, specially priced now at all Camelot music stores. Right now, a special selection of Camelot Price Fighters. Cassettes 188, CDs 288, Laserdiscs 1488 at Camelot Music.
Breaking news!
What is this garbage you're watching? I want to watch the news.
This is the news.
All right, gang, we've got our intrepid rock and roll beat reporter on the line, Rico Ganu, with the Ganu's. Rico, how are you?
No, Ganu's is good. Ganu's.
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Not too shabby. I'm ready to learn what's going on in the wild and crazy world of rock and roll.
So, Loudwire, posted some comments. Tommy Lee's wife speaks finally about all of Tommy's all of his dick pics and all of the stuff that he posts on the internet all the time. Stuff that, you know, do we really want a 60-year-old past his sell-by date guy to be posting dick pics on the internet? I mean, I know he's got the state of Florida between his legs, but isn't there a point in time before I get to what she says? Isn't there a point in time where, okay, I know it's Tommy Lee and that's kind of his shtick, right? And it's his stick at the same time. Hi-o. But shouldn't we get to a point, Mr. Lee, where we just take it out to go to the bathroom and then maybe if you want to bang your wife, fine, but shouldn't we just leave the dick pics off the internet like now in 2023 when your day in the sun was like 35 years ago and you're dyeing your hair to not look 60 now? And I mean, what do you have an opinion on this at all?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, a question for you. Have you ever sent a dick pic?
No, never have. Never had the opportunity, never had the pleasure of photographing my penis and sending it to somebody. What about you? Have you ever done that?
I have not. It makes me nervous. Oh, okay. I feel like the image goes right up to the cloud now, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, my camera doesn't zoom in that far for me to be able to do that.
And let's talk about your penis for a minute in terms of how photogenic it is. Do you have to like set up lighting for it? Do you groom or something to like make things look good down there? Or do you just literally pick up your phone and snap a few pics and hope for the best?
God, no, Scott. What planet are you from? First you have to get the product. Like for me, I like going with some old school Jerry curl. So I get some, I let my winter bush grow out, so it's nice and majestic. I throw some Jerry curl in there, and then I fluff it up real nice and make sure it's nice and even. Then I kind of like play with myself a little bit so it doesn't look so small, like it's maybe a little bit palatable and sticks out farther than the hair, which is important. So I got the Jerry curl, fluff it up, play with myself a little bit so at least it's longer than the hair. And then yes, you got to get some good lighting. You don't want to get the bad side. So I get the lighting set up on the good side, and then I snap the picture. And then there's heavy photoshopping afterwards.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it just looks like a Vienna sausage poking out of a Brillo pad. The other thing about it is, yes, Tommy Lee is 60, and I'm an older man as well. Not quite 60, but I'll be there soon. And I'm middle-aged, and I'm proud to say that, I mean, I've seen my body every single day for 48 years, and all of me looks much, much older than it has before, but my penis kind of still looks the same, man. I mean,
hey, good on you, man.
I don't know. I don't see any gray hairs happening down there. There hasn't been significant shrinkage. You know, it doesn't have any added wrinkles that it didn't have before.
So your wrinklage is still on par as it was back when you were in your 20s?
It's just as crooked and wrinkly as it ever has been.
Wow, yeah. Nice, man. So you've got a very youthful penis. Good job.
It's kind of always looked elderly.
Nice. It's, well, stately. Like, what do they call that? debonair.
Yes, it looks like that. Winston Churchill down there.
Anyway, his wife is basically like, she's a comedian, I guess. And she's like, oh, that's just silly Tommy, just being silly Tommy. And I can't really control him because he's just, you know, just being a 60-year-old goofy guy putting stuff on the internet. That's basically her take on this. And cool, man. I mean, you know, if she digs it and she digs him slapping around with it, then I guess then they're match made in heaven, and he's going to keep doing it. So, you know, whatever.
I mean, he is what he is, man. Tommy Lee, we've saw him going back to the Pam Anderson video. We've been seeing Tommy Lee's penis for 25, 30 years now. We'll probably see another 30 years.
I mean, fuck, why stop showing it now? Jesus Christ. We have a whole new generation of music fans that need to be exposed to his penis while he's still alive. He's got to keep it going. You know, it's like tradition now. Jesus. On the flip side of that, let's talk about Rammstein. Would you want to do that for a second?
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I was hoping you'd let me try to say it. Rammstein.
Ooh, good. I like that. Good job. Thank you. Are you from Germany?
I am not.
Well, you sound like it. Good job.
Thank you.
So, Till Lindemann has been accused of recruiting females at concerts to go backstage to have sex with. And apparently, that's news now. Breaking news, Scott. I've got breaking news for you. You ready for this? Breaking news. This shit's been going on for like 50 years now.
So fill me in here. Is he doing the Bill Cosby thing? Is he like slipping roofies and drinks to get laid backstage? Is that what's going on?
No, I could be wrong, but I'm not seeing anything to that degree. I think there are some things about filming some things, but I could be completely wrong on this, but I'm not seeing anything with regard to any criminal activity, if you will. But dude, memo to the world, if recruiting a girl to go backstage, I'm gonna be a little boomer here, even though I'm not a boomer. I'm gonna take a little bit of a boomer approach to this, if you will. So if I'm a rock star, if I'm Till Lindemann, and if I can send my cronies around the audience to pick out some nice looking girls to willingly come backstage and have sex with me willingly everywhere I go, why wouldn't I want to do that?
This is like,
let's hold on before you answer, let's flip the script for a second, and this is totally spontaneous and not planned, by the way. Let's flip the script. What if Cardi B was doing a concert and she was ripping off wet ass pussy, and she sends her cronies out to the audience to find some dudes that willingly want to come backstage and have sex with her? Nope. Do you think anybody's going to talk about that? No, what they're going to say is, man, girl power. Fucking A, Cardi, good job. Way to show off your girl power. You recruited some dudes to come backstage to bang you. That's a good thing. It would be celebrated because it's girl power. But if Till Lindemann recruits some girls that willingly come backstage, and again, I could be fucking this story up bad, but it seems to me that if in today's world where nobody can do anything without everybody knowing about it, I feel like there's really not a whole lot of, I feel like this is happening voluntarily. And if it is happening voluntarily, what the fuck's wrong with it?
Do you remember Behind the Music?
Oh, great show, by the way.
Did you ever see the Def Leppard episode?
Did not see that one.
It's okay. It's not just Def Leppard. It was literally like every band in the 80s had like signals that they would give roadies, you know, the singer, like third row back, row 15, third seat or whatever. You have a signal, mm-hmm. and they would get like a pass to that girl, you know, and then she would end up backstage. And the Def Leppard one is classic because they basically say that, like, under the stage, you know, during extended drum and guitar solos, that it was like, you know, it was just an orgy going on under the stage. And these things were celebrated, you know, on Behind the Music. But, you know, that show was on in what, the 90s? And so, but the world has changed quite a bit in 30 years. And I'm guessing, I don't know. I read a little bit about this online and I wasn't 100% clear in terms of what was going on. If it's just groupie shit and everybody's of age, who cares? But if there's like, you know, if there's drugs or something involved in some activity that isn't consensual, then dude's probably going to be in some trouble. So, you know, we'll see, man. We'll keep our fingers on the pulse of it. But the most important thing out of all of this, Rico, is that if you want to hear us talk more, Rammstein, go back to episode 58, where we do our autopsy on Du Hast.
You should do that. It's nice. A good episode. No, it just in this article from The Guardian, there was one of the girls involved. She said she had a real quick before we take a break. She had a couple of drinks, then started to act erratically about 8:30 p.m. She had a little bit of gaps in her memory, leading to her later fear that her drink had been spiked. A urine test obtained from a pharmacy showed no signs of drug in her system. In a follow-up post on May 30th, the woman said, "Till did not touch me. He accepted that I did not want to have sex with him. I never claimed he raped me." So whatever is happening, it's either not happening or it's happening voluntarily with clear heads and adult decision making here.
You know what, man? That's why I need you doing the news on this podcast, because unlike me, who has zero reading comprehension and just skims article and draws wild conclusions, you actually thoroughly read things and try to be rational and clear headed about things. So good on you for bringing a little bit of balance to the show. We need the good news, man.
Hey, thanks, man. Appreciate that. So having said that, I want to get away from the love fest and we're going to take a quick break so I can go fluff up my winter bush. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a band whose lead singer was ranked in the top 10 Yarlers of all time. He's ranked number 4 out of 10. That's right, Eddie Vedder and Pearl Jam. So we'll be right back.
Before you go, if you like heavy metal and stories, then you'll love Battle of the Bands, the narrative form metal podcast that unpacks the biggest rivalries in rock and metal history. Season 1 took in Megadeth versus Metallica, and Season 2 went across the divide to explore the beef between Judas Priest and Iron Maiden. It's like Business Wars, but metal. Find Battle of the Bands wherever you listen to your podcasts or visit battleofthebandspod.com.
We are gathered here to remember rock and roll. Rock was born the rambunctious son of country, western, and blues. In the year of our Lord, 1955. On this day, the birth of rock and roll gifted unto the world a gyrating pelvis, a throbbing beat, and a pulsating rhythm, a sound so infectious and rollicking that it would endow previously scrupulous young minds with identity, individualism, and purpose, thus setting forth a multi-generational pursuit of all that is loud, debaucherous, and unholy. But, sadly, like all earthly endeavors, rock too must perish. Oh, we mourn the loss of rock and roll, with its ridiculously old standard bearers still on tour and charging ungodly amounts of Mad Jack to witness their long past the sell-by date asses on stage, and with its chauvinism, misogyny, and whiteness no longer aligning with modern sensibilities, and with its aging, fist-shaking fan base kicking every would-be rocker off their proverbial lawn, rock has indeed passed into the celestial void. May rock rest in peace in eternal cacophonous slumber. Amen.
Thank you for that, Scott.
You are listening to the Rock and Roll Autopsy Podcast.
The Autopsy Report.
All right, gang, welcome back. We're doing Alive by Pearl Jam. Good song, great album. The album is 10. Boy, what a cool year in rock, man. 1991, so much good music coming out in that time period, that year. This released in July of 91, so this is some summertime jams going on. Recorded in London Bridge Studio in Seattle, Ridge Farm in Dorking, England. This is a longer song, 541, believe it or not. Label is Epic. Eddie Vedder wrote it. Stone Gossard, produced by Rick Parshar and Pearl Jam. Part one of the Mamasan trilogy, Scott. Part one of the Mamasan trilogy. How about that? But that's all cool and well, but did it kill rock? We're about to find out.
I was today years old whenever I found out about this trilogy.
I know.
I've only been hearing this song for 30 fucking years. I had no idea that Pearl Jam had a trilogy, and this was like, what, part one?
Part one. I had no idea.
All right, gang. Well, maybe you don't know, and you'll learn something from this silly podcast. It's Rock and Roll Autopsy, the song Alive by Pearl Jam. We got to find out if it killed rock and roll. To do so, we are going to use our own proprietary, easy for me to say, proprietary science. It consists of five categories. They are gratuitous boomerism, excessive misogyny, wanton whiteness, malignant machismo, and culture vulturism. Rico, it's Alive. We've finally left the 80s. After being in the 80s for the past couple weeks, we've now moved onward and upward into the 90s. We're in the grunge era, early grunge, with Pearl Jam and Alive, the category gratuitous boomerism. Rico, how do you score?
Man, you know, before I found out what this song was really about, I kind of had this, you know, hold on one sec. Sorry, I had a really bad itch in my ear. So when this song, before I found out what the song is really about, which we'll get into, I felt like this was kind of one of those like anthemic feel good songs, you know, dad died, but I'm still here and I'm pushing through and I'm feel good that I'm going to be okay. Right. That's kind of the, that's kind of boomerish, right? That kind of like feel good bullshit. That's not really real. But song's not really like that. And Eddie Vedder is 1964 is when he was born. So that's kind of like, what's the cutoff there?
Rico, it's technically remember. He's a boomer by 1 year. 65 starts Gen X.
All right, science. We got to do the half because he's a boomer, but maybe in this case I take that half point away because he's one of like one of the Mount Rushmore of Gen X grunge rock. So I'm going to remove that half point for his birthday. He's close enough anyways. There's no way this is boomerism in my book. This has got to be a solid zero for me.
Thank you, Rico. You know, at first blush, I thought the same thing. I thought we were talking about I love the term. I'll just go ahead and steal it. Mount Rushmore grunge bands and Pearl Jam. So I thought there's no way that I can apply any value in terms of gratuitous boomerism to this. I couldn't even give. There's no way these men are boomers. These have got to be Gen Xers. Au contraire, mon frere. I looked it up. This is a 5-piece band, and 3 of the 5 were born before 1965. They are late boomers, but they're boomers.
Boomer.
And I had no idea. I mean, I was stunned. Matt Cameron, Jeff Ament, and Eddie Vedder all are boomers. Who knew? But
what about our good friend Mike McCready? Do you know when he was born?
He is not. He's 66.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just checking on that.
So, yeah. So we've only got 2 true Gen Xers in the band, which is stunning. How is it that the boomers are defining our generation? Back off our generation. I thought we had defined ourselves with.
I mean, everybody younger than us is already putting us in your category anyway. So just let us have fucking something, please.
Something. I mean, we're the most forgotten generation. And now I find this out. Good grief.
Jesus. Come on.
Anyway, listen, to me, in spite of all that, my mind is telling me and my heart is telling me, score to 0 like Rico. This is a Mount Rushmore grunge band. This is Gen X. But I'm going to go ahead and give it a 0.5 because I've got to stick with it. And I like the fact that you did not because it kind of balances it out. And I feel like the 0.5 is fair in this regard. Speaks to the science, but doesn't excessively penalize by you and I both doubling up on it. Let's move on. Category 2, excessive misogyny. And I do have lyrics available if you'd like to hear them.
I would like to hear them.
Well, one thing about Pearl Jam and Eddie Vedder is I've been hearing this song for 30 freaking years. And I have no idea what the lyrics are because they're literally unintelligible. So you and I are going to learn the lyrics together because we can't tell what Marble Mouth Vedder is ever singing about to begin with.
That he's yarling. That's a thing.
It's the yarl.
It's the yarl.
I am not going to yarl. I'm just going to read them. Son, she said, have I got a little story for you? What you thought was your daddy was nothing but a. While you were sitting home alone at age 13, your real daddy was dying. Sorry you didn't see him, but I'm glad we talked. I'm still alive. Hey, I'm still alive. Hey, I'm still alive. Hey, I'm going to continue reading on a little bit, Rico, because I think the lyrics are important in this analysis, if you don't mind.
Please continue.
While she walks slowly across a young man's room, she said, I'm ready for you. Why, I can't remember anything to this very day, except the look, oh, you know where, now I can't see, I just stare. Goes through the chorus again, and I'll read the final verse.
Yep.
Is something wrong, she said. Of course there is. You're still alive, she said. Oh, do I deserve to be? Is that the question? And if so, who answers? Who answers? I, oh, I'm still alive.
Okay. So.
I need help with this.
I feel like because you and I have been listening to this song since it came out in 1991, and we're just now finding out what this fucking song really means. I feel like we need to kind of deviate from the norm a tad and just kind of explain to everybody what's going on here. So what's happening here is the female in this story is the young man's mother, and she's explaining to him, while you were 13 years old, your dad, he's obviously at this point in time a little bit older than 13. They don't really specify, but he's in his teenage years. Okay. So she explains, you know, this other guy is my boyfriend, essentially, is what we can discern from this. Like, she's dating somebody else, but she's like, hey, man, I'm sorry. Your dad died. Sorry you didn't get to see him when he was dying. Don't know the circumstances, but the point is his real father's dead. And here's where it gets a little twisted, because the mother is just as fucked up as the kid is over the guy's death. Right. And when she sees her son, all she sees is his father. All she sees is her husband. And so what winds up happening here in the song is she winds up molesting him and having sex with him because she can't get over the fact that he reminds her so much of her husband. And so that's what's happening here. She walks across the room and says, are you ready? And the look, we know what the look is now, Scott, don't we? When he says, I don't remember anything except the look. Now there's an article, the article that I'm referring to, let me give it its due diligence here. This is River Sore Records, posted an article on June 24th of 2021 by Marvin Phythian, I'm guessing, Phythian, wrote this article where he's talking to Eddie Vedder, and Eddie Vedder discusses the Mama Son trilogy. And essentially that part of the song where he says, I don't remember anything except the look, I can't see, and now I just stare. That's basically, he's like, her VJ is staring him in the face, and he's just like, he's like, doesn't know what to do. Like, he's frozen with, like, he's short circuiting because his mother's VJ is staring at him in the face. So that's really what's going on here. Scott, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
I would like to add that if you want to hear Rock and Roll Autopsy further discuss or attempt to discuss the Oedipus Complex, go back to episode 35 and listen to us talk about The End by The Doors. So as soon as you wrap listening to this episode, do a twofer. Go back and listen to that one as well. It's a companion piece, not Rico. I have no clue. I think you did a great job explaining it. It's a bizarre subject matter for a song to me. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know much about Eddie Vedder or even me Pearl either. Jam beyond just that they've been a part of my life for 30 years, but I never really dug into reading about these dudes.
Well, clearly neither have I.
So in reading about this song, we go to songmeetings.com a lot, and I find the comments to be really useful. Right. And someone wrote in there, Logan Clark, 813, on April 5th of 2012, wrote this. If you'll allow me to read it, I think it'll go nicely with what you just laid out.
Thank you, sir. Please continue.
It says, actually, a lot of you are right, but there is a deeper meaning to the song. The fake part of the song, most of you have right about the boy finding out about how his dad is really his stepdad and how his mom abuses him. But the actual part about Eddie Vedder is how he found out that his dad was really his stepdad. He was very hurt by this, but eventually went on to form Pearl Jam. And one night at a concert, he talked to a man backstage for a few minutes, and later in the week found out that that was his biological father and that he died. That is why the song, that's why in the song he says, "I'm sorry you didn't see him," which is him referring to how his mom didn't get to see his dad like he did. And then he says, "But I'm glad we talked," which means that he is glad that he got to talk to his dad before he died. So it's a pretty deep song. This, according to Logan Clark, 813 on songmeetings.com. So I think there's like a lot going on in this song. Like this song could be him telling a story that kind of in a weird way references his own life as well. Are you getting that at all from that? Yeah,
there's kind of like he takes his story and wraps it up with a little bit of fiction, i.e. the trilogy, and see, dude, this is why rock is dead, and this is why the 90s took the this is an example of the 90s taking the fun out of music, because it was soon as I love grunge, I love this era of music, but it's no fun, man. It gets really serious and holy introspective hell. And psychological. And there's, I mean, when I listen to this song now, I feel like I need to go to fucking therapy afterwards.
Yes. And we just got done in a news segment. We spent 10 minutes talking about Tommy Lee's junk, and that's fun. You're right. It's fucking depressing.
I mean, and this is like the entire first half of the 90s is like this. That's why it was the perfect other side of the coin to the 80s. You know, the 80s were all everything that this era of music wasn't, and vice versa. But anyway, I digress for a second. But yeah, this song is really fucked up and deep and deep and deep and deep. And I didn't have any idea. Consequently, part two of the song is the first song on this album, Once. And then the third song is Footsteps, which is off of a different album. It's on a different album. I think all of you Pearl Jam fans, I had it, but I don't have it now. I can't remember what album it's off of, but it's off of another album. But part three is called Footsteps. Part two, should we talk about part two and part three real quick before we move on?
Yeah, and then eventually we got to score Excessive Misogyny, because we're going way off the off course.
I know, but I feel like in this case we kind of had to for a second. But part two is one.
And it's so goddamn unfun.
This is going to be our most non-fun autopsy maybe ever, aside from us talking about The Wall. That one was not fun, but for different reasons. Anyway, so part two is called Once. It's the first song on the album. It turns out that this shit that his mom was doing to him fucked him up so bad he became a serial killer, and that's the second song. And then the third song is him being on death row, blaming his mom for what happened to him. So there you go. There's the Mama Son trilogy. It's out there for everybody to listen to. Excessive Misogyny, Scott. This is a perfect instance of like reverse misogyny. Like the mom is really fucking this kid up in a bad way. It's like misogyny, but it's in the spirit of misogyny, where she's totally controlling him and putting him under her thumb because of her own fucked up sensibilities. So this is going to get a 1.0 for me for misogyny, even though it's like the reverse fucked up version of that.
Yeah. And I'm going to go the other direction on this. Thank you for your score. I'm going to go the other direction. I have no idea what's going on. It's just dark and depressing. It's a kid with dead dad or stepdad or abusive parent or
I know
mom wanting to have sex with their son. And I don't know what the hell I'm looking at here.
I don't know.
I thought it was, as some kid who's only like encounter with the song is just hearing it on the radio in the 90s over and over again, I thought it was like this life affirming Gen X anthem.
Yes.
Like, I'm still alive. No, it's just depressing.
Like you want to raise your fist and like, yes, that's me. I have the strength to push through my tough times now because of this song. But
I was
like
getting
that.
So depressed while you were breaking all this down that I got out a pair of clippers and I actually shaved my bush down and I gave myself a flat top. So my junk now looks like the sergeant and Gomer Pyle. I'm scoring it a zero. My goodness, that was a long category. Let's move on. Category 3, Wanton Whiteness, Alive by Pearl Jam. Rico, how do you score?
I feel like introspective psychological songs about the father that you never knew and a mom who sexually abused their son because it reminds her of her father, and it's all twisted up in this. I feel like that's super white, man. I mean, I'm the genre of music itself is really white too. Grunge is a really white genre of music as well. And in my opinion, anyways, and the deep introspective nature of this song that is really generally just fucking depressive and makes me not want to listen to the song anymore now because I know what it's really about. I think that's super white and I'm going to give it a one. And yeah, they get a half point because they're white anyways. So
yes, thank you. Yeah. They're going to get the 0.5 for me and I'm going to bump it up to a one because listen, this is where I'm going to get a little personal here. This is one thing that AI can't replicate what I'm about to give you. It's pure Scott. It can't be faked, okay? Because it's based on my life, dude. And I have a relationship with this band because of my age. I was the perfect age when this shit hit. And I loved Nirvana. I loved Soundgarden. Alice in Chains to me sounded like heavy metal with like cool vocals. Pearl Jam of the Mount Rushmore is the band I struggled with the most, man. And I don't know if it was, I think now kind of looking back on it, I think it was kind of Eddie Vedder. You know, I think Eddie Vedder is like the Bono of grunge. You know what I mean?
Ooh, it's like, man, what a great analogy.
He is. And in that sense, he's a guy who's fighting the good fight and fighting for all that is righteous and just, but he's also kind of like annoying and pretentious while doing it. Right.
Yes.
And I can't understand a damn thing this guy is saying. And we used to, back in the day, my brother and I used to sink a bunch of quarters into the jukebox at Annabelle's and play Pearl Jam songs, not because we liked them, but because we've sang along with them. And when we did, we wouldn't enunciate a single word.
Well, you don't have to.
We'd get dirty looks from everybody in the bar.
The song, all you have to do is just go, Earl, 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 Earl.
That's
Earl.
It.
And you sound just like him.
That's
and
it.
On top of that, to piggyback off of what you're saying, his lyrics, and a lot of them are, but his lyrics are particularly deep and cryptic. And
right.
You know, you never know what the fuck he's talking about half the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we would sing Black in the bar. We'd put our quarters in the jukebox and Black would come on and we'd go.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't know. I mean, what are we
you
listening
sound just
to?
Like him.
We do, but the problem is like that ended up like metastasizing and effectively just becoming the way male vocals were in rock, like forever. You know, it's kind of still going on, right? Like everybody started doing the Jarl and it just became the thing, and rock still kind of hasn't shaken it, you know.
It got old quickly.
Yeah, and so for that, I'm going to score it a big, giant, honking one for Wanton Whiteness. Let's move on. Category 4 in our rock and roll autopsy. Our listeners, Rico, they're either at this point with this song, because their fan base is so rabid and they're kind of polarizing. Our fans, our listeners are probably our fans. Listen to me.
Speaking of pretentious, how about that?
My goodness. Wow. Our listeners are either right with us right now or they're hating everything we're saying right now. It's one or the other.
If they're even still listening, that is.
If they didn't turn it off during the protracted penis conversation at the top right. of the show.
Or the overly lengthy description of what the song is about in the first place.
I mean, we're giving the world content. We never promised good content.
That is true.
All right. Category four. They're on the edge of their seat. They want to.
Oh, yeah. Because they want to leave.
Malignant machismo. Rico, how do you score?
Yeah, man. I mean, God, there's none of that in this. Like our protagonist slash antagonist is a teenage boy that's getting molested by his mom. I mean, there's not a lot of machismo in that. I mean, the presentation, you know, Eddie Vedder always has had a kind of in the early version of Eddie Vedder has always had this intensity that I always kind of appreciated. I appreciated the intensity in which he sang his song, especially, I have to always bring this up, when I can't remember what year it was, maybe 91 or 92, the MTV Music Awards, where they did Jeremy live on the MTV Music Awards. That was the most intense, phenomenal, awesome performance probably that I've seen in a long time. When I saw that, it was such an incredibly amazing performance because he was so intense and sold his song so hard and did such a great job that I appreciate it for that. I got to give him a half point just because of the Eddie Vedder intensity that I appreciated so much on this album.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a zero for Malignant Machismo. It's just the wounded. I mean, is this a boy in this instance? But
yeah,
largely in grunge, it's the depressed male, the depressed white male, really.
Right.
Which is kind of an odd thing to kind of think about in a lot of ways, but it's this, you know, beaten down kind of depressed guy thing that all the exactly. grunge artists are writing from that perspective, right?
That they're all wounded, fractured psyches that they're internalizing all their songs, trying to cope with who they turned out to be in life.
Right. The wounded beta male genre of rock. There's nothing masculine about that. You know what I mean? And so
no, that's super true. That's a good point.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, for me, I'm gonna go ahead and score
so it. if you're a beta male and you're like the best at it, are you a master beta?
You know, Rico, I hesitate to even use that term because it's so inflammatory, like on Twitter politically. It's such a political hot button. It's like woke. It's got all this political stuff attached to it that I just don't even use it.
But silly.
I kind of had to there. One, because I was kind of going for a laugh. And two, because it really is. These dudes are just depressing.
I know.
They're just depressing, kind of like inward-looking songwriting. You know, it was navel gazing, you know, kind of self-absorbed songwriting always,
which really sucked all the air out of rock during that time period from a certain perspective.
Sure. But I want to make clear, I'm being hard on the band and the genre and the song, but I actually really like Pearl Jam. I think they rock. I mean, at the end of the day, they're rock, right?
Yeah. We're banging on them right now, but we're both big fans of them, and particularly this album. I fucking love this album. This is their best album, in my opinion.
It probably is, but I don't listen to it because I heard so much of it. It was one of those records that was burnt on the radio. If I listen to Pearl Jam, I listen to like Yield or you know, or like what was it, Gigaton or Giga? What was it?
Yeah, I know it came out like a year ago. Yeah.
I listen to that one a lot on Spotify,
but
I like it, but I just don't go back to this one because I'm fucking fried on it.
Well, if they're listening to it 1,000 times, sure.
Sure, yeah. Anyway, but to be clear, I love fucking grunge. I love all that shit. But
totally.
But science. Category five, culture vulturism, to wrap up our rock and roll autopsy. Alive by Pearl Jam, a song that for decades I thought was about self-affirmation. No, sir. Culture vulturism, how do you score, sir?
Well, for me, this is a big zero because they kind of are one of the founding forefathers of navel gazing grunge rock. They're not the forefather, but they are one of them, and so they're not appropriating anybody or any sound or anything else. They really are one of the bands that created this, so this is a big, huge zero in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. This is a song that, you know, for one thing, Pearl Jam is like an embryonic grunge band, right? I mean, Certainly. Born out of the ashes of Mother Love Bone, right? I mean, this is like one of the, again, we've kind of I keep repeating it, a Mount Rushmore band in that genre. And really, the last great rock movement was the grunge movement. And so, you know, akin to punk, I mean, a movement that really changed the genre forever. And so super important band, super important songs, super important artist. I can't assign culture vulturism to anything that was so revolutionary in its time. And if you're a younger listener, and I've seen our numbers, I know there aren't any. All of our listeners are like, they're all like silent generation. We've really cornered the market on the 70 and up. Anyway, I digress. If you're a younger listener and only know Nirvana t-shirts because you see them like on the shelves at Walmart, and rock really isn't like huge in the culture right now and hasn't been for a long time, and so to you it's something that like you kind of hear in movies or see, you know, people wear from like a fashion perspective, but you're not familiar with, you could never really understand how revolutionary the grunge movement was. It really was an atom bomb that was just dropped into the culture, and it just upset everything, and especially the trajectory that rock and roll was on. It just knocked the fucking train off the tracks. And for a good, like I'd say 4 to 6 years after that, into the 90s, it just gave birth to a super creative window of time in music. We've talked about it before. There were no rules. Everything was out the door. There were no gatekeepers. The music got really creative, and a gazillion bands and songs kind of flowered in its wake. And it was a really positive time overall for rock music, in spite of how goddamn depressing the music was. Having said that, I can't score it anything. I got to give it a zero for culture vulturism.
For sure.
The band deserves the credit for fucking changing the world back then.
Absolutely. That was very, very well said. Absolutely.
All right, Rico, let's add it up before we piss anybody else off. What have you got, sir?
I've got 2.5.
And I've got a 1.5 for a grand total of
4 points. Actually, that wound up being higher than I thought it was going to be. But still, the science works as it should.
Yeah, I mean, I think that lands kind of, you know, right where one might think it would, you know.
Actually, you're right. Actually, now think about it, it's right on the lower edge of the middle. It almost is a hardcore contributor, not quite though. So you're right, it falls right where it ought to be.
Fucking 10. I'm looking at it right now. 13 times platinum.
Holy Christ. Hey, it's a good album, dude. Think about that, 13 times.
They were moving some units back then, man. And when we say units, we're not talking about Tommy Lee's junk. You know what I'm saying? When we say 10, we're not talking about, we're not measuring
the length of Tommy Lee's junk.
Yeah. The big 10 inch. We got to add that to our song list. Big 10 inch by Aerosmith.
Oh, consider that added. So in a future episode, gang, you're going to hear that song, Big 10 Inch by Aerosmith.
More dick talk on Rock and Roll Autopsy.
Doesn't get any better than that, does it?
Rico, you got anything else you want to talk about tonight before we wrap?
I need a good, a good conditioner for my pubic hair. The Jerry curl gets it a little greasy. Then I've got to use some really, like, I got to get that stuff out. And then my my winter bush tends to get a little dry, so I'm needing some. You got any good conditioner recommendations? I mean, I don't know if you can give me a conditioner recommendation, because unless you use some on your own winter bush, because you don't really have too much on top. So
yeah, you're literally talking to a man who's bald about hair product. Thanks a lot, man, for aggravating my sensitivities. I would tell you just to shave that shit off, man. It's going to make you look more profound, shall we say.
So what's the best way to do that? Should I just wax it, get it waxed, or like shave it?
No,
I mean, what's better? I mean, there's pros and cons. If I shave, then I might get the shave bumps. But if I wax, then it's the pain of, you know, just think of the movie 40-Year-Old Virgin, except on my junk. Like, what's the better way to get rid of it then?
Get some Nair. Nair? Just use hard chemicals.
Just get some battery acid and just dissolve it. The acid that they use to like eliminate evidence when they kill people and they put them in the bathtub. Yeah, that kind of acid.
Go full Breaking Bad on your junk.
On my junk. Wouldn't that be great?
All right, gang.
Let's get out of here so I can go groom myself.
All right, gang. It's been Rock and Roll Autopsy. We'll see you next week. Good night now.
Let me have that special rock and roll music. Yeah!
Let me tell you, so the lyrics to real rock music is nothing more than satanic cyanide. Get it out of your house, throw it out, and burn it. It has no place in the house of the righteous.
You guys, it was like a mistake. There's no mistake anymore.
To the dawn, love it, hey, to the morning. I'm gone.
Follow us on Twitter at RNR Autopsy, or you can send an email to rockandrollautopsy@gmail.com. And if we run across anything good, we'll mention it in a future episode. Thanks for listening. Later.
Well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.